A sepia-toned aerial view of sound stages shimmers in waves, rotating to become a golden WB within a shield-shaped frame set against a cloudy blue sky. On an encircling gold band, the words Warner Brothers Pictures, and below, a Time Warner Company. Light refracts through colored glass panels that are spinning like a mobile. Letters sweep along the multifaceted surfaces in mirrored reflections. A one-word logo unfolds across the center of the screen, Studio Canal. Colored columns ripple behind it, then fade away. In silver capital letters appear the words, Heyday Films. Behind them, wispy clouds fill the view. The letters break apart as the view descends past them and through the clouds to a series of towering waterfalls. Two bears sit on a rope bridge stretching across the frothing river below. Yellow words appear, a few bear years ago. One of the bears sets a sandwich on his head and replaces his red hat on top of it.
Our last rainy season.
Just think, Pastuzo. This time next month we'll be in London.
Where the rivers run with marmalade and the streets are paved with bread.
Did you read the book about London?
I skimmed it.
Oh, Pastuzo.
Well, reading makes me sleepy. But any city that can come up with this is all right by me.
He scarfs down a stack of marmalade sandwiches.
Oh, Pastuzo, look!
Through binoculars, Pastuzo spots a baby bear clinging to a log in the river.
It's a cub. Lucy!
Lower me down.
Be careful.
Pastuzo uses a vine to lower Lucy toward the water. As the rapids carry the cub downriver, it struggles to hang on to the log. A view looks straight down at the rope bridge, the top of an enormous waterfall just beyond it.
Lower, Pastuzo! Lower!
The cub reaches out to Lucy, hanging in front of him, but rolls off the log. Lucy dives after him, and the vine pulls Pastuzo down, knocking off his hat. The log flies over the giant waterfall and disappears into the churning water below. Pastuzo hangs from the bridge by a vine wrapped around his ankles, still holding the vine from which Lucy swings upside down.
Lucy!
I'm afraid we're not going to London after all.
Why not?
We've got a cub to raise.
She grips the cub's hand.
What's he like?
Rather small. And rather sneezy.
The cub eats the sandwich from Pastuzo's hat.
But he likes his marmalade.
That's a good sign.
Oh, yes, Pastuzo. If we look after this bear, I have a feeling he'll go far.
Pastuzo's red-brimmed hat sits atop the cub's head. Warner Brothers Pictures and Studio Canal present, in association with Anton Capital Entertainment SCA, a Heyday Films production. In the present, the now-grown bear writes in the condensation on the Browns' attic window, Paddington 2.
Dear Aunt Lucy, I hope all is well in the home for retired bears. Life in London has been better than ever this summer. I've really got to grips with how things were.
In the bathroom, Paddington sticks an electric toothbrush in each ear, then each nostril, before using them to brush his teeth.
And it seems there's something new to do every day.
In the kitchen.
Guess what, Paddington? The steam fair's coming to town.
Ooh.
I'm going along tonight to write about it in my newspaper.
Who's going to want to read about that?
Everyone.
They travel the world in an old steam train. I thought you'd love it.
I do. Don't tell anyone, OK? Not cool.
Why don't we all go?
Good idea.
Father's a dab hand at the coconut shy.
Ooh.
Bullseye Brown, they used to call him.
Well, not anymore. Coconuts are a young man's game.
Well, I think you're in great shape for a man your age, Mr. Brown.
Ah, thank you, Paddington.
Hang on, how old do you think I am?
Oh, about 80?
80?
At least.
Just a minute, young bear.
Hmm?
I thought I told you to wash behind your ears.
Oh, but I did, Mrs. Bird.
She pulls the coin from his ear.
I wonder how that got in there.
Outside.
I really feel at home in Windsor Gardens.
Bonjour, mademoiselle.
Good morning, Paddington.
He hops on the back of her bike.
I brought you breakfast.
Thank you. Your sandwiches always put me in a good mood.
Morning, Dr. Jeffrey. You haven't forgotten your keys, have you?
Keys? Keys.
Jeffrey stops his door before it closes.
Well caught.
Thank you, Paddington.
You're welcome. Glorious day, Colonel.
Is it? How absolutely thrilling.
How was your date, Miss Kidd?
Well, he wasn't the one, but you know what they say.
Pretty puppies in the sea.
Exactly.
In a newsstand, a parrot sits on Miss Kidd's shoulder. Now the woman rides up to a garbage truck.
Morning, Paddington.
Morning, Mr. Barnes.
Barnes lifts him onto the truck.
Au revoir, mademoiselle.
Right. Test me.
What's the quickest way from Baker Street to Big Ben?
Ah, an easy one.
Turn right onto Portman Square.
Everyone has been so kind and welcoming, even though they're very busy. Mrs. Brown is planning to swim to France. It seems an awful lot of hard work when you can go by boat or plane or even train. But that's not the point. She's been cooped up all summer illustrating a series of adventure stories and has decided she wants one of her own.
One of Mary's drawings comes to life and shows her diving into an underwater city.
Judy has been suffering from a broken heart.
I'm dumped. I think you'll find you're dumped, Tony.
Her first reaction was to become a nun. But she soon got over that and has thrown herself into a new hobby. She found an old printing press at school and is starting a newspaper with no boys.
Now all we need is some news.
Jonathan is joining her at big school this year. He spent the holidays building a fully working steam engine. But I'm not supposed to talk about that, as it's not cool. He's got a whole new look, and if anyone asks, he's now called J-Dog and is definitely not into steam trains. But Mr. Brown has been busiest of all. He recently had a surprise at work.
I am delighted to announce our new head of risk analysis will be Mr. Steve Visby.
Henry turns to the younger Steve Visby.
And this has prompted what Mrs. Bird calls a full-blown midlife crisis. It involves blending his food, painting his hair, and engaging in a process called chakrabatics.
Open your mind and your legs will follow.
In yoga class, Henry tips over.
Thank you, Paddington.
Keep up the good work.
Mr. Barnes drops Paddington off.
Oh, Aunt Lucy, you sent me to London to find a home, and it's worked out better than I ever imagined. I have a wonderful family and have made friends in all sorts of places.
Hey, boy.
A dog trots to Paddington.
There you go, Wolfie.
He feeds him a treat and moves on.
I do hope if you could see me, you'd be pleased. Lots of love from Paddington.
In the antique shop.
Mr. Gruber.
Ah, Mr. Brown, come in. I just had a visit from Madame Kosleva, who runs the fair.
Oh, yes?
They were having a clear out and found all these old crates stuffed full with memorabilia they thought had been lost forever.
Oh.
She asked me if I would sell it for them while they're in town, and it struck me there might be something in here for your auntie's birthday.
Oh, good idea.
Paddington touches a metal ball and his fur stands on end.
Look at this.
Mr. Gruber holds up a toy monkey on a trapeze.
It's very nice, Mr. Gruber, but...
I know. It has to be perfect.
Well, since Uncle Pastuzzo died, I'm the only relative she's got left. And it isn't every day a bear turns 100.
Paddington puts on a fruit hat, a fake nose and glasses.
How about these rolling shoes?
Please, Mr. Gruber, be serious.
Perhaps your auntie's rolling days are behind her.
I think you might be right.
Paddington pulls a book from a trunk.
What's this?
Ah, that must be the popping book. Very interesting.
Really?
You see, Madame Kosleva's great-grandmother, who started the fair, was also a brilliant artist. And every time they visited a new city, she made a popping book to remember it by.
Oh.
And this is London.
As Paddington opens the dusty pop-up book, a 3D design unfolds of an ocean liner passing under Tower Bridge.
Oh, Mr. Gruber, it's wonderful. Aunt Lucy always dreamed of coming to London and never had the chance. But if she saw this, it would be like she were finally here.
The view moves toward the pop-up ship, where Aunt Lucy weaves past the paper passengers to the railing.
Aunt Lucy! Aunt Lucy! Paddington!
She waves at him and he runs around cut-out pedestrians on the shore.
Oh.
The little bear jumps into Aunt Lucy's arms and she holds him close, shutting her eyes.
Come with me, Aunt Lucy.
Oh, yes, please. I want to see everything.
They descend into a subway station, then emerge in the street scene on the next page.
Well, what do you think?
It's wonderful.
Paddington waves down a double-decker bus.
All aboard.
1.5 bears, please.
Mind your step, madam.
Oh, what a polite young man.
On another page, they feed pop-up pigeons.
What a polite young pigeon.
The paper pigeons take flight as a building gives way to pop-up Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament. Aunt Lucy and Paddington gaze out over the River Thames.
Oh, Paddington, you've made an old bear so very happy.
In the shop.
This is perfect.
Gruber eyes a paper.
Oh. Uh-huh. We have a snag.
Do we?
You see, this popping book is the only one of its kind, and they want rather a lot of money for it.
Oh, well, Mrs. Bird found this coin in my ear at breakfast. Perhaps there's more.
Oh, it would take more than an earful, Mr. Brown. I'm afraid you would need 1,000 of those coins.
Oh.
Let's take another look at the monkey. I think he's super duper.
The toy monkey flies into Paddington's face.
I can fix that.
That's very kind, Mr. Gruber, but Aunt Lucy did so much for me when I was a cub, and this could be my way of saying thank you. I'm going to get a job and buy that book.
Later.
Back in a few minutes, Paddington. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao, Mr. Giuseppe.
In a barber shop, Paddington talks to a broom.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Giuseppe's grooming salon. What can I do for you today, sir? A shave? A light pomade? Or is it just a brush?
A man enters.
Quick trim, barber.
Oh, I'm not the barber. I just tidy up.
Yeah, well, that's all I want. Tidy up the back and sides, nothing off the top.
Yes, but...
No, but come on, man, chop, chop.
If you say so, sir.
Paddington grabs the shears from his pocket, but they fly out of his hand and into the ceiling.
Ah.
He selects a pair of electric clippers from a tidy assortment of combs and brushes.
On.
With two hands, Paddington grips the shaking clippers, which cause ripples in his clothes and fur. The vibrations move Paddington across the floor. As he rotates, the clipper's cord wraps around him and he accidentally cuts the tops off of a few brushes. A potted plant lands on his head and he spins past the sleeping customer. He picks up the phone with his mouth and flips it to his shoulder. He vibrates toward the man.
I think I may be about to shave a customer.
The cord tightens, stopping Paddington.
Oh, thank goodness.
The cord pulls a lever on the barber's chair, leading the man into the clippers. The cord wraps around a ceiling fan.
Just putting you on a...
The fan spins Paddington through the air, outside the shop.
But I don't want to.
It's only a haircut, Nelson. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Paddington splats against the window.
Come in. Take a seat.
We'll go somewhere else.
He slides down the glass to the floor, and his eyes widen at the bald strip shaved down the back of the customer's head.
Oh, that's not good.
He pads over to the barber's chair. He presses the tufts of shaved gray hair to the sleeping man's head, but they fall off.
No.
Paddington pops open a jar of marmalade and scoops some into his paw. He smears the orange jelly onto the bald strip.
Just giving you some product, sir.
Very good. Carry on.
Paddington brings the chair upright.
All done.
Paddington shows him the back of his hair in a mirror.
I must say it's turned out a lot better than I expected.
The gray-haired man touches the back of his head, wiping off the clumps of hair stuck on with marmalade.
What the devil's that?
It's, marmalade.
Marmalade?
Hairy marmalade.
Well, get it off!
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Paddington licks the man's head.
Yuck! What is the matter with you?
Paddington! Mr. Giuseppe! I can explain. It's really not as bad as it looks.
The sparking ceiling fan turns on the sprinklers. Later, Paddington wrings out his hat at the steam fair.
Have you ever been fired, Mr. Brown?
Well, no, but... Are you quite sure you're ready for the workplace, Paddington? It's a tough, competitive world out there.
And I worry a good-natured little bear might get trampled underfoot.
He's right, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't trust anyone. That's why I'm doing my newspaper alone.
Darling, is this about Tony?
No!
Everything's about Tony. And
Paddington gets his tongue stuck on a candy-coated toffee apple.
Well, at least I'm not pretending to be someone I'm not.
Nor am I.
A group of Gina. Boys walks by.
J-Dog. Spudbugs.
But Aunt Lucy said, if we're kind and polite, the world will be right.
At least someone's making sense.
Sorry. And you're kind, Mr. Brown. And you made it to the top.
I'm nowhere near the top. I peaked in the middle. Now my hair's gone grey, my belly's popped out, and I've started to creak.
A crowd gathers around a man on stage.
Doesn't that man live in the big house on the corner?
It's Phoenix Buchanan.
Dad's celebrity client.
Mm. He's one of our Platinum Club members and a very famous actor.
Oh, used to be. Mm. Now he just does dog food commercials.
Mm. Mrs. Bird doesn't like him because he can never remember her name.
Now then, simmer down, simmer. All right, a little bit more.
Phoenix stands before an ornate organ.
I'm sorry, I'm at my worst tonight, I really am. I am tickled, the deepest shade of shrimp, to have been asked here tonight to open this wonderful old steam fair.
But you know, when Madame Kozlova created this thing all those years ago...
She most certainly was not thinking of people like me. Whatever I am, VIP, celebrity, I hate all that stuff. No, no, West End legend, that's another one. No, no. She was thinking of you guys, huh?
the ordinary people. So, I'm going to ask one of you to come up here and open the fair. Volunteers! Anyway.
Sitting on Henry's shoulders, Paddington raises his hand as high as he can.
Bear. Let's have the young bear. Why not?
Come, come, young Ursine.
Thank you.
Up here, my furry friend. Very good, very good. Now, your name is?
Paddington Brown.
Oh, well, of course it is. You are my new neighbour. You live with Henry and Mary and the great Mrs. Now then, I suppose you know who I am.
Oh, yes. You're a very famous actor.
Oh, poo.
Or used to be. Now you do dog food commercials.
Well, a man has to eat.
What? Dog food?
Phoenix forces an uncomfortable grin.
Oh, very, very funny. Anyway, they do say
that at Madame Kozlova's, all your dreams come true.
So, if you had one wish tonight, what would it be?
Oh, that's easy. I'd like to get my Aunt Lucy a birthday present.
Oh.
I've got my eye on an old pop-up book of London, made by Madame Kozlova, as it
Phoenix's
happens.
Brow furrows.
The only problem is it's rather expensive, so I need to get my paws on an awful lot of money.
Well, I'm not sure that we can offer you that, but we can, of course, offer you oodles of fun. So,
if you would like to lend me a paw, we now declare Kozlova's steam fair open!
Paddington and Phoenix press a red button and sparklers shoot off from the stage. They take off their hats and bow. Judy snaps a photo. Paddington walks off stage.
Just one moment.
A word in your ear. This pop-up book,
do you know it?
I know of it, but I was led to believe it was lost. Where on earth did you find it?
Oh, at Mr. Gruber's antique shop. He's keeping it to one side for me, but I really need a job. I don't suppose you have any advice, do you?
No. I imagine you just have to start at the bottom of the ladder and work your way up.
Do you know what, Mr. Buchanan? You've just given me the most brilliant idea.
Have I?
I'm going to be a window cleaner.
On a townhouse's front step, Paddington flips open a suitcase. He pops up a device inside and winds its crank, extending a ladder up to a window. Next, he fills a red bucket with hose water and soap. He grabs the handle and starts toward the ladder, but the weight of the bucket stops him. The little bear tries to lift the heavy bucket, but it doesn't budge. He looks up.
Ah.
Now, Paddington ties a rope around the bucket handle and takes the other end with him up the ladder. He tosses the rope around a pipe running along the building. Holding on to the end of the rope, he hops off the ladder, then glances around as he just hangs in front of the building. Paddington picks up a potted flower from the window, then descends as the bucket rises up past him. Landing softly on the front step, he sets down the flower pot. The rope lifts him back up.
Oh dear.
Soapy water splashes out of the bucket as it thumps hard on the front step. It glides back up, sending Paddington flailing down until he lands with one foot in the flower pot. He falls onto his rear, then looks up just before the bucket lands on his head.
Ow.
Paddington tries to push the bucket off, the flower pot still stuck on his foot.
Hello? Anyone?
At home, Dr. Jaffrey works at a desk. Paddington wanders in front of his sliding glass door. The bear smacks into it, knocking the bucket off his head. Jaffrey looks back at him, and the wide-eyed Paddington rubs his soapy body against the sliding door. He uses his backside to clean the glass as Jaffrey watches with a mesmerized look. Moments later, Paddington runs his finger along the clean glass. Jaffrey gives him a thumbs up. A time-lapse view of Windsor Gardens shows Paddington speedily cleaning windows up and down the street.
Hello? Window cleaner?
No, thank you.
Paddington peeks through the mail slot.
You sure, Colonel? They're awfully dirty.
I don't care, and I'm not paying.
Perhaps I'll do them anyway.
Inside a dim room in his home, the Colonel sits in an armchair sipping tea. He doesn't look over as Paddington climbs up the ladder and starts to clean the outside of a filthy window. The Colonel glances over as a shaft of sunlight brightens the room. Paddington finishes cleaning the now clear window. He rides his ladder down to the ground. The Colonel goes over to the window and gazes out contentedly. His eyes land on Miss Kitts, who waves at him from the newsstand. He glances behind him before returning the wave with a smile. Miss Kitts points down, then pretends to walk downstairs. She pops back up. The colonel mimes pushing a button and descending in an elevator. Miss Kitts laughs. The colonel answers the door.
Good afternoon, Colonel. You're where? There's a bear on your roof.
Yes.
He seems to be cleaning my windows.
Shall I do your gutters while I'm up here?
Yes! Thank you!
Well, of course, it's not for me to say, Colonel, but I wouldn't care to have an undesirable crawling all over my premises and as commander of your community defence force.
Is that an official position, Mr. Curry? Or have you just bought yourself a yellow coat?
He shuts the door on Mr. Curry.
Got my eye on you, bear!
A wad of gutter muck lands on his face.
Sorry!
As days pass, a large jar labeled Aunt Lucy's Birthday Fund sits on the attic window seat and fills with coins. In an alley, Paddington washes Wolfie and brushes the dog's teeth. Later, Paddington swings back and forth across the garbage truck's windshield, wiping away soap suds. Studying in the front seat, Barnes gives him a thumbs up. In an aquarium, Paddington swims inside a tank, cleaning the glass with his squeegee. He lifts his hat to the patrons watching him, and fish swim out from under it. In his office, Henry talks on the phone and waves at Paddington absentmindedly as the bear rubs his back against a soapy window. Henry does a double take. Outside the building, a five-piece band plays on a window washing platform. As it descends, Paddington stands on top of a piano, rubbing his backside against the sudsy windows of the towering, pointed skyscraper. At night, Paddington walks down the sidewalk past Gruber's antique shop. He sets down his suitcase and stands on it to look in at the pop-up book in a glass case, pressing his paws and nose to the shop window.
One more day, Aunt Lucy.
He steps away from the window, returning to wipe his nose mark from the window with his squeegee. He looks around the corner.
Mr. Gruber?
Hey?
You're not Mr. Gruber.
Clear off!
Oh, no, you don't.
The intruder enters an upper-story window. Paddington climbs up his own ladder. The intruder smashes the glass case and takes the book. Paddington looks out an upper window at the intruder escaping out the front door.
Stop! Thief!
The bear dashes downstairs and out of the shop.
Come back with that book!
A police car arrives.
Robbery in progress at Gruber's Antiques. Suspect is a small bear wearing a red hat and blue duffel coat.
Paddington chases the thief.
Stop! Come back!
Paddington runs through an alley, then spots the thief getting away on a bicycle.
No.
Elsewhere, Wolfie perks up. Now, Paddington rides on the wolfhound's back as it gallops along a canal.
Come on, Wolfie.
They gain on the thief's bicycle. As they near it, Paddington reaches out to grab the book from the rear basket.
Oi! Oi! Get off it! God,
if that back!
Paddington loses his grip on the book.
No.
Nice try, bear.
Whoa, Wolfie.
The thief rides over to a bridge to the other side of the canal.
Toodaloo.
Paddington spots a slowly approaching boat.
Yeah.
As Wolfie rears up, Paddington falls off him.
Ow.
Moments later.
Come on, boy.
Paddington rides on Wolfie as the dog runs over the rooftops of boats, leaping onto an island covered in plants. The thief glances over.
Excuse me. Coming through. Who are you?
Paddington emerges from the plants, holding onto a flying swan's legs.
Oh, dear.
Strike a light.
The distracted thief crashes into a post but holds on to the book.
That book is reserved for Aunt Lucy.
The swan looks down at him.
Hello there.
It pecks at his face.
Ow, not the snout. Wolfie!
Wolfie runs alongside the canal. Paddington lets go of the swan and lands on the dog's back.
Thank you, Wolfie. Oh, come on. Attaboy.
They chase the thief, Phoenix in disguise, down a street until he stops.
All right. You got me.
Hand over that book.
Afraid I can't do that.
Cheerio.
He throws something at the ground and disappears in a cloud of smoke. Wolfie runs away.
Where did he go?
Hold it right there.
Oh, thank goodness you're here, officer.
Put your paws in the air.
But I'm not the thief. I was chasing the thief. And then he...
Disappeared in a puff of smoke?
Well, yes.
Police cars surround Paddington, holding up his paws. Later, residents come out in their pajamas to watch the policewoman walk the handcuffed bear down his street. Dr. Jaffrey and Miss Kitts stare in disbelief. The Browns rush out of their townhouse.
Paddington!
Oh, no! What's going on?
Hold it there. Hang on. We're taking him into custody.
Oh, please, there must be some mistake.
No mistake,
but
sir.
What's happened?
Caught red-handed.
What?
Robin Gruber's antiques.
Oh, well, well, well. The truth is out. We opened our hearts to that bear. We opened our doors. Well, you did. I kept my triple locked in accordance with the guidelines. And all along, it was Robin you blind.
Paddington's loaded into a police van.
Paddington!
The van drives off.
Oh, no!
Paddington!
Tears shine in Paddington's eyes. In a room filled with costumed mannequins, the disguised Phoenix stares in a mirror.
A nice little haul and no mistake. Turned out to be quite a stroke of luck, that bear turning up when he did. Coppers think he'd done it. We're in the clear.
Indeed, Magwitch.
He pulls off the wig.
And we gave quite a performance, you and I. Just like the old days.
He removes the rest of the disguise.
Why the lemon face, Hamlet? If you have something to say, I beg you share it with us all.
It is not, nor it cannot come to good.
He talks to a mannequin.
You and your dreary conscience, tell me this. Which would you rather, that you stand here gathering dust while I humiliate myself in a spaniel's costume on television, or that we all return in glory in the greatest one-man show the West End has ever seen? Oh, thank you, my darlings. Thank you.
He holds out his arms and takes a bow.
Blessings upon you all. Deepest of bows. Thank you. I know what you're thinking, Scrooge. It'll cost a fortune. But if I'm right, that is exactly what this book will provide. This is no dusty antique. Hidden on every page, a little lady pointing to a clue. Find all the clues. We're rich again. And our dog food days are done.
A TV plays the commercial.
Dinner is served, Master.
Thank you, Simpkins.
Phoenix wears a dog costume.
Like me. Your doggy likes to maintain standards. Can I recommend Harley's Gourmet Dindins? More taste, more goodness, more, dare one say, class?
He takes a bite of dog food.
Harley's Gourmet Dog Food. Oh. Not to be consumed by humans.
In a courtroom.
Court will rise.
Deep breath, Paddington. Remember what Mr. Brown said. You're young, you've done nothing wrong, you'll be fine. So long as you get a fair-minded judge.
Order! Order!
Paddington recognizes the judge as the customer from the barber shop.
Oh, dear.
You'll now hear the case of the Crown versus Paddington...
Brown.
Later.
Oh, yes, he loved the book. His heart was set on top of it.
So you discussed how expensive it was?
Yes, but he was earning the money.
I refuse to believe that young Mr. Brown would ever burglarize my shop.
Exactly.
Paw prints were found here, here, and here. And a substance later identified as marmalade was found here.
And is this the same marmalade?
The lawyer holds out an open jar of marmalade, and the forensic investigator rubs it on his teeth.
Yes, it is.
Phoenix Buchanan, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
May my entrails be plucked forth and wound about my neck, should I deceive.
I do.
Prison is no laughing matter, and I should know. I spent 3 years in Les Miserables.
Mr. Buchanan, you live on the same street as the defendant.
I do.
And you were an eyewitness to the events that night.
Indeed, I was. I was up late when I became aware of a hullabaloo in the street below. I went to my awards room, which is a large room overlooking the newspaper kiosk, and I saw young Paddington riding a rather disreputable-looking hound.
Mary Brown drew this based on the bear's description of the man he claims he was chasing. Did you see him on the street that night?
Oh, handsome devil, isn't he? Dazzling eyes.
Yes, but did you see him? Your answer will tell us whether the bear is guilty. Did you see this man?
Alas, I did not. But perhaps he'd already vanished. I beg you, have mercy on him. He is but a cub.
Now Paddington wears a prison uniform.
Paddington Brown. 10 years for grand theft.
Oh, but I...
And grievous barberly harm.
A set of barred doors opens for Paddington.
Follow me.
Paddington walks slowly behind the warden, who carries a clipboard. A high view looks straight down at the small bear trailing the warden through the high-ceilinged atrium. Paddington's brown eyes glance around vulnerably before he follows the warden up a staircase. The warden opens a cell door, a small desk against a weathered wall. Paddington steps inside.
Mrs. Brown usually reads me a story before bed. I don't suppose...
Sorry, son. No bedtime stories in here.
Oh.
The heavy door closes, leaving Paddington alone in the dim cell. He grabs a pad of paper and pencil from the desk and climbs up a pipe in order to sit in front of a small barred window high on the wall. He starts to write.
Dear Aunt Lucy, a great deal has happened since I last wrote. There's been a bit of a mix-up with your present, and the upshot is I've had to leave Windsor Gardens and move somewhere else. It isn't quite as charming as the Browns' house, but it's not all bad. It's a period property. In fact, it's one of the most substantial Victorian buildings in London. And the security arrangements are second to none. I'm only allowed to see the Browns once a month. I wonder what they're doing now.
Judy uses the press to print copies of the Portobello Express with the headline, "Have you seen this man?" beside Mary's sketch of Phoenix disguised as the long-haired bearded thief. Elsewhere, Mary plasters an outdoor wall with "Have you seen this man?" signs. On another wall, Jonathan uses the posters to spell out Paddington. In another part of town, Henry leaves the brick wall under an overpass lined with the signs. Back in the prison,
I do hope they don't forget me.
He hastily erases the last phrase.
Of course they won't, Paddington. This is the Browns you're talking about. They'll sort everything out, and I'll be able to go home and get your present, and everything will be right as rain.
He looks at his cell.
I just need to hold on till then.
At night, traffic travels along Tower Bridge. Inside one of the towers, a guard patrols through a royal armor exhibition. Carrying a flashlight, he walks past suits of armor. Once he's gone, one of the suits starts to move, lifting the helmet's visor to reveal Phoenix's face. Moments later, he ascends a staff-only spiral staircase. Upstairs, he opens a window and hops out onto the rooftop of a covered walkway. Covered in the metal armor, Phoenix jogs stiffly across the long, narrow roof to the bridge. Arriving at an embellished column, he wipes away dust to reveal a letter carved in the stone.
D.
He writes the letter on the first page of the pop-up book.
The hunt begins.
At the prison, the prisoners step out of their cells one at a time.
325, 326, 327.
Here goes Paddington. Manners.
They head downstairs in an orderly fashion.
Good morning. How would you like to start a gardening club?
How'd you like to be buried in a very deep hole?
The big inmate glares.
After you.
Spooner R, workshop.
They file past the warden.
Brown P, laundry duty.
In the laundry room.
Right. Laundry. Laundry, laundry. Ha! Laundry.
Paddington pushes a button on the wall labeled, "Press for laundry." He glances around. Doors open above him, and an enormous pile of laundry dumps on top of him. The bear pushes out through the top of the heap. He pulls a red sock out of his mouth. He tosses the sock, and it lands on his hat. Now, a time-lapse view shows Paddington sorting the laundry into four washing machines. He reopens the last machine and adds his own uniform. He throws in his hat with the sock on top and grabs a sandwich from his head. He starts the wash cycle and walks away. Paddington goes to take a bite of his sandwich and freezes. Turning back, he spots the sock in the last machine. He tries pressing the button, but the machines don't stop. He pulls hard on the handle and it breaks off, sending him flying to the ground.
Oh, it's only one red sock. What's the worst that can happen?
Later, a canteen full of prisoners in pink-tinted uniforms glares at Paddington.
Afternoon, chaps.
The big inmate fumes.
If you ask me, the pink really brightens the place up a bit.
If you ask me, you should pipe down and enjoy your dinner, because it might be your last.
Okay.
Carrying a tray, the bear pads along the long tables and squeezes in between two other inmates. He lifts his hat to each of them before staring at his dish of beige mush. He sniffs a spoonful.
Ooh. Don't worry. I used to be a restaurant critic. It's not as bad as it looks.
Oh. Paddington takes a bite and his eyes bulge.
It's worse.
What is this?
Nobody knows. We've been eating it three times a day for the past 10 years.
Why doesn't someone have a word with the chef?
With Muckles?
Do things to remember if you want to survive in here. Keep your head down and never talk to Knuckles.
Thank you.
Well, I think it's a great idea. Tell you what, son. You get Knuckles to change the menu and we might forget about you making us look like a bunch of pink flamingos.
All right, then. I will.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
Aunt Lucy said, if you look for the good in people, you'll find it.
She obviously never met Knuckles.
Paddington marches up to the canteen counter, where a large man in a striped chef's hat stands with his back turned.
Excuse me. Mr. Knuckles?
Yes?
I just wondered if I could have a quick word about the food.
Send a medic to the canteen. You want to complain?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say complain.
Oh, that's a shame, because I just love it when people complain.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
He clutches a rolling pin.
Well, in that case, it's very gritty.
Oh.
And lumpy. And as for the bread...
He bonks Knuckles in the head with a baguette.
I think we need to completely overhaul the menu. Now, I know we're working to a tight budget, but we could at least add some sauce.
He squirts ketchup on Knuckles' apron.
Sorry about that, I'll just...
He climbs onto the counter and smears around the ketchup.
No, that's just rubbing it in. Don't worry, I know what gets ketchup stains out.
He squeezes on some mustard.
Hang on, was it mustard?
He rubs it in.
No. That's just made it worse. Does anyone know what works on ketchup?
The inmates hide under the tables.
Chaps?
Knuckles angrily snaps the rolling pin in half.
Forget the medic. Better send a priest.
You listen to me, you little maggot.
Listening?
Nobody criticizes my food.
Right.
Nobody squirts condiments on my apron.
Got it.
And nobody bonks me on the head with a baguette.
No bonking.
I'll overhaul the menu, all right.
Really?
Dish of the day?
Yes.
Bear pie.
I don't like it!
Paddington flails his arms, shoving a marmalade sandwich from under his hat into Knuckles' mouth. The chef's eyes go wide, and Paddington and the other inmates watch as he takes the sandwich out of his mouth and chews thoughtfully.
What is this?
It's a marmalade sandwich.
Marmalade?
My Aunt Lucy taught me to make them.
You mean... you can make this?
Well, yes.
Stand aside. Get up off the floor, you bunch of yellow bellies!
Listen to me. This bear is now under my protection.
Oh?
Anyone who touches a hair on his back will answer to Knuckles McGinty. That's Knuckles, with a capital N!
His misspelled name is tattooed on his knuckles.
Thank you, Mr. McGinty.
Don't thank me yet. I don't do nothing for no one for nothing.
Beg your pardon?
You get my protection, so long as you make that marmalade. Deal?
Knuckles spits on his hand and holds it out.
Deal?
Paddington spits on Knuckles' hand. Meanwhile, Mary posts a "Have you seen this man?" sign in the door of Gruber's Antiques.
Somebody's got to recognize him sooner or later. You're right, Mr. Gruber.
There's something about this whole business that has been tickling my brain box.
What is it?
On the night of the robbery, when young Mr. Brown called out, the thief took to his heels and ran down the stairs.
Came straight through the shop and out the front door, setting off the alarm.
Ah, but that's the thing. He didn't go straight through the shop.
No?
He came all the way over here to get the popping book. Why not some jewellery or a vase? They're much closer, far more valuable. He can't know much about antiques.
No. Unless he knows something about that book that we don't.
At the fair...
You may find this hard to believe, Madame Kozlova, but Paddington is innocent. And we think that the real thief may have broken into Mr. Gruber's just to steal your great-grandmother's pop-up book.
The pop-up book?
I know it sounds far-fetched.
But is there anything you could tell us about that book? Anything at all could be helpful.
That's quite a story.
Oh, really?
Come with me. I'll show you where it all happened. You see, my great-grandmother, who started this fair, was the finest showwoman of her generation. She could tame lions, breathe fires, follow swords, but she was most famous for the trapeze.
In a flashback,
they called her the Flying Swan. Wherever she went, she was showered with gifts and made a fortune. But where there is a fortune, there is also jealousy. The magician wanted it for himself.
He cuts a rope.
And the Flying Swan.
During a performance, the rope snaps and she falls.
Became the Dying Swan.
The magician steals her key.
He went to her caravan and opened her strongbox. But instead of her treasure, all he found was one of her pop-up books. 12 landmarks of London. They had him cornered, but he vanished.
He disappears in a puff of smoke.
And neither he nor the treasure were ever heard of again.
In the Browns' bedroom.
I knew there was something special about that pop-up book.
Hmm?
Why else would she have kept it in her strongbox?
You're not telling me you believed all that guff, are you?
Madame Kozlova drew 12 London landmarks in that book.
Yes.
Well, what if they're not just landmarks? What if they're... I don't know. Clues.
Clues?
To where she hid her fortune.
You mean a treasure map?
Exactly.
Oh.
And that's why the thief took it from Mr. Gruber's. First thing tomorrow, we need to go to every landmark in that book. See if we can sniff out anything suspicious.
Too many adventure stories, Mary.
What?
She's a fortune teller. She spun you a yarn. It's what they do.
Honestly, Henry, you're so close-minded these days.
What's that supposed to mean?
What happened to the man I married? He'd have believed me.
Oh, him. He's gone.
What?
I'm afraid your husband's just a creaky old man. He's not Bullseye Brown.
Oh,
in a flashback to a steam fair, young Henry, with long hair and a mustache, throws a ball at a row of coconuts balancing on posts. Young Mary watches as the single ball knocks down 3 coconuts. Henry pushes down his aviator sunglasses.
Bullseye.
Oh.
She's crazy, Father Daddy.
Henry. Henry.
Back in the present.
Anyway, the point is, we're not going to help Paddington by going on a wild goose chase. We're looking for this scruffy chancer, not some swashbuckling pirate hunting for buried treasure.
I think there's more to him than meets the eye. I think he somehow knew the story of the Kozlova fortune. And is out there right now trying to find it.
In the mannequin room.
Well, grandfather.
Phoenix eyes a photo of the magician.
We go in search of clue number 2. The setting, St. Paul's Cathedral. But how to slip in unobserved. Enter Sister Isabella.
Dressed in a habit, Phoenix breaks away from a group of nuns inside the cathedral. In the prison, Knuckles taps on a sleeping Paddington's nose.
Wakey, wakey. Marmalade time.
In the canteen.
There you go, lads. Good luck.
Mr. McGinty?
What do you want?
Well, the thing is, I'm actually innocent. And I wondered if you had any advice on how to clear my name. Now that we're friends.
Friends? I'm your boss, not your buddy.
Paddington opens the kitchen door.
After you.
Why? So you can stab me in the back?
No, because it's polite. Aunt Lucy said if we're kind and polite, the world will be right.
You were ahead of me and now you're behind. That makes you a sap.
He turns on the lights.
Ingredients are over there.
Aren't you going to help?
Nope.
Now get on with it.
But there's 500 hungry prisoners coming for breakfast. So we'll need 1,000 juicy oranges.
Oh, and rule number 1. No talking.
Knuckles sits down with a newspaper. Paddington scowls at him and puts on an apron.
Rule number 2. No humming.
But,
or singing. Or any other expression of bonhomie.
He lifts the paper and Paddington dons a pink-tinted chef's hat, plugging his nose and blowing to inflate it. He goes over to a wall and stares up at numerous sacks of oranges on a top shelf. He climbs up toward them. Paddington yanks on one of the bottom sacks.
Oh, that's heavy.
Knuckles lowers his paper.
Come on, put you back into it.
All the sacks of oranges tumble on top of Paddington. Knuckles rolls his eyes, then lifts a sack off the bear's face.
These sacks are awfully heavy.
We'll take them one at a time, then.
Right.
Knuckles drops the sack.
Fine.
As Knuckles settles back into his chair and reads the paper, Paddington patters by holding a single orange.
One juicy orange.
One of the paper's articles is titled, Dry Cleaner Accused of Money Laundering. A deal is being ironed out.
Two juicy oranges.
Knuckles slowly lowers his paper to watch Paddington walk back and forth.
Three juicy oranges. Four juicy oranges.
Now what are you doing?
Taking them one at a time.
One sack at a time!
I'm sorry. I'm finding this a very stressful working environment. Aunt Lucy said...
Aunt Lucy? I've had enough to hear with Aunt Lucy! She sounds like a proper old bag to me.
I beg your pardon.
I said, your Aunt Lucy sounds like one of the most naive, gullible, mushy-brained...
Paddington's face hardens.
What's going on?
Knuckles' eyes widen.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Paddington's glare grows more intense.
It's awful hot in here. You hot? I'm hot. Did I leave the oven on?
It's called a hard stare. Aunt Lucy taught me to do them when people had forgotten their manners.
You don't have to tell me about hard stares. I practically invented them. Pretty good for a bear, though, I'll give you that.
Now, Mr. McGinty, I may look like a hardened criminal to you, but I really am innocent. And if you're not going to help me clear my name, you could at least help me make this marmalade.
All right, I'll help.
Thank you.
Not going to be much use to you, though. These aren't exactly made for cooking.
Oh, I don't know. Looks to me like you've got yourself a fine pair of orange squeezers.
Orange squeezers?
Now, Paddington sniffs oranges and passes them to Knuckles, who squeezes them into a pot with his bare hands.
Good. No. Better. Tomato. Lovely. Yes. Spot on.
Later.
Now, we have to be very careful with knives. Aunt Lucy said that sensible bears...
Knuckles expertly chops orange peel.
Where on earth did you learn to use a knife like that?
You don't want to know.
Well, it's jolly good.
Now, Paddington stands beside the steaming pot.
Now.
Knuckles scrapes in the chopped orange peel.
Right, it's time for the sugar. That's what turns the juice into marmalade.
Much?
Oh, a lot.
Knuckles adds a large scoop of sugar to the pot.
Same again. A squeeze of lemon, a pinch of cinnamon, and just a bit more sugar.
He dumps in a jar of sugar.
Is it good?
Oh, it's too soon to tell. We'll only really know once it's set.
He licks inside of the jar at the cathedral.
Designed by Sir Christopher Wren, St. Paul's Cathedral is one of London's most famous landmarks. Sadly, the Great Dome is closed to visitors today, as one of its statues was destroyed in a bizarre accident last night.
Mary and her kids approach a security guard.
What happened here?
A nun went berserk.
Really?
It happens. The police have rounded them all up for questioning. Hold it there, sister. You're going nowhere till the detective says so. Spin it around.
A nun returns to the rest of the group.
Mind you, if you ask me, the real culprit slipped the net.
What makes you say that?
Because I saw her. That's what.
In a flashback.
I was on patrol in the upper dome watching the nuns parade far below when something caught my eye. One of them broke free from the herd and made her way to the Whispering Gallery.
Dressed as a nun, Phoenix finds a letter carved in a statue, accidentally loosening its support.
Only the good Lord knows what she was doing up there.
See.
He writes it in the book.
But she was never going to get away with it. Not while I'm Vice Deputy Head of Security.
Oi!
As Phoenix rushes away, the support comes free of the statue, which plummets to the floor far below.
Attention all units, an unusually attractive nun is causing mayhem in the...
Phoenix changes his costume into that of an archbishop.
Stop that stunning sister!
I set off at lightning speed.
He walks briskly.
But by the time we'd locked the place down, she'd vanished into the night.
Good evening, my son.
Good evening, Your Grace.
Good evening.
In the present...
Most beautiful woman I've seen in a long time.
Do you think you might be able to describe her?
It would be my pleasure.
In the prison canteen, Paddington holds an orange on a long fork and bangs it against a pot lid.
Gentlemen, for breakfast this morning, Chef McGinty would like to propose an orange marmalade served on a bed of warm, crustless bread, topped with another piece of warm, crustless bread. Bon appetit.
The inmates just stare at him.
Two choices. Take it or leave it.
The prisoners dig into their sandwiches, and Paddington finds Knuckles in the kitchen.
Are you all right, Knuckles?
Yes.
Why don't you come and join the others?
Don't want to.
He cleans pans.
Are you scared what they might think?
No.
What do they think? Did they like it? Did they say anything? What did they say?
Well...
They hated it! I knew it! My father always thought it amounted to nothing, and he was right!
Knuckles! Knuckles!
What?
Come and look.
Paddington opens the sliding window into the canteen for Knuckles to watch the prisoners eat. A view travels along one of the tables where inmates savor their marmalade sandwiches, some shutting their eyes in enjoyment. Paddington and Knuckles share a look.
Come on.
Paddington leads the chef into the canteen. As the prisoners clap for him, Knuckles steps behind the counter and Paddington stands on top of it. The bear lifts his hat graciously.
Paddington. A strange, warm tingle in my tum-tum.
I think that's called pride, Knuckles.
Well, I don't like it.
Paddington lifts his hat again, and Knuckles smiles.
Have you got anything else?
What?
You know, for pudding.
No!
Fair enough.
I'm afraid we only know how to make marmalade. Mm. But if you have any recipes...
This lot. You're wasting your time there, Paddington. They wouldn't know their pectin from their paprika.
A prisoner wearing glasses stands.
Well, my grandmother used to do a lovely chocolate roulade. I think I can remember the recipe.
Ooh.
Charlie Rumble makes a mean apple crumble.
Charlie Rumble nods and the big inmate stands.
And I can make a strawberry panna cotta with a pomegranate glaze.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Don't you, Knuckles?
Yeah.
Come on, then. Let's get cooking.
In the kitchen, a time-lapse view shows the counters filling with china plates and cups. The prisoner with glasses hands Paddington his dish.
Oh, nice roulade spoon.
Inmates work on various desserts, and Paddington places the roulade on a cart.
Thank you, Fibs.
Knuckles adds on a tall pink cake.
There you go, Paddington.
Oh, Knuckles.
I want those penny pours now.
Paddington pushes the cart and rides it through the canteen, where the long tables are replaced by round ones with checked tablecloths. A prisoner grabs the top of the cake with his bare hand.
Excuse me, Professor. What would Aunt Lucy say?
Always use a cake fork.
Well, then.
Riding on the cart, Paddington tilts the roulade into a butterscotch fountain on his way to the warden.
Care for a taste, warden?
Thank you, Paddington.
Butterscotch!
The view travels past barred doors and through the moving cogs of a clock to the prison atrium. Flower boxes appear on the railings and colorful bunting decorates the walls. Prisoners with their hands joined spin in a circle while others jump rope and play games. The five-piece band in pink-tinted striped suits plays as a banner rises behind them. It reads, "Prison, sweet prison." In his office, the warden reads from a book into a microphone.
And it turns out the monster wasn't such a monster after all.
And they all became the best of friends. The end. Time for bed, you lot.
You need your beauty sleep. It's visiting day tomorrow.
Visiting day.
He stares at a photo of his family.
I do hope you have good news.
The next day, they sit on the other side of a visitation window and show Paddington three sketches of Phoenix in disguise.
In the past month, these three shadowy individuals have all been seen snooping around three London landmarks.
Oh.
We think the thief you saw is part of a criminal gang,
using the pop-up book as a treasure map.
Well, it's a theory.
Have you found out who they are?
Not yet, dearie.
Maybe I should take a look.
I'm sorry, this is a private conversation.
Oh, it's all right, Mr. Brown. This is my friend, Knuckles.
How are you?
And this is Fibs.
G'day.
Spoon.
Hello.
Jimmy the Snitch.
All right.
T-Bone.
Watch out.
The Professor.
Hope.
Squeaky Pete.
Hello.
Double Bass Bob.
Hello.
Farmer Jack.
Hello.
Mad Dog.
Oof.
Johnny Cashpoint.
Ka-ching.
Sir Geoffrey Wilcott.
I hope I can rely on your vote.
And Charlie Rumble.
It's so wonderful to meet you all. I must say it's a great relief to know that Paddington's already made such sweet friends.
Would you excuse us a moment?
Henry hits a switch and their light goes off.
What are you doing?
Talking to the nice men.
Nice men? Mary, we can't trust these people. I mean, look at them. Talk about a rogue's gallery. Hideous. And as for that bearded baboon in the middle, he's hardly got two brain cells to rub together.
We can still hear you, Mr. Brown.
Oh, yeah.
That was the light you turned off.
The microphone is on the other side. It's got
microphone written on it.
Judy turns the light back on, and Henry looks squarely at the prisoners.
Gentlemen, if I have offended you in any way...
Don't worry about it. We're fond of the little fella.
And let's face it, if anyone can recognize a criminal gang, it's us.
We'd be grateful for any help.
Please.
Judy holds up her newspaper with the sketches.
Knuckles?
I'm afraid I don't recognize any of them. Lads?
No. I'm afraid I couldn't possibly comment.
Sorry to say it, kid, but your friends are barking up the wrong tree.
None? A beef-eater and a king? Sounds more like a fancy dress party than a criminal gang.
Then, what are we going to do now?
His family wears discouraged expressions. Another day, a light snow falls as Mary leaves her home. She crosses the street in front of the woman on her bicycle.
Oh, which way are you going?
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, I get grumpy when I haven't had breakfast.
Dr. Jeffrey steps out his front door.
Keys.
The door closes.
Bottoms!
Barnes studies on the back of the garbage truck.
You can't park here.
I'm not parked, I'm doing the bins.
You're not doing the bins, sunshine. You're studying on council time. I'm going to report you.
Mary approaches the newsstand with Judy's papers.
Morning, Miss Kitts, Colonel.
Oh, morning, Mrs. Brown.
Judy asked me to drop these off to you.
Propaganda! You are wasting your time trying to peddle that rubbish. Everyone round here knows it was your bear that done it. And this street is a far, far better place without him.
What?
Oh, it's that mangy dog! You are going to the pound, my son! Park it without a license in a built-up area!
Give him here, Mary. I have to sell them under the counter, for obvious reasons, but people are buying them.
Really?
It's a blooming good read. Made a few people round here think twice about your young bear.
You just need to find that thief.
Oh, we're trying. Don't suppose you know where he is, do you, Feathers?
He's behind you!
Sorry, what?
Cooey!
She turns around.
Mary?
Oh, hello, Phoenix.
Why don't you come on in? I want to hear all about the investigation, yeah?
In Phoenix's home.
Mysterious things have been happening all over town.
Yes?
Strange characters turning up at every landmark in that book.
Are they?
I don't know. Perhaps it's just a coincidence. Henry says I let my imagination get the better of me.
Well, you're an artist, Mary, like me. Our imaginations run free... like bison upon the plain. But can I just say, in this particular case, I think dear old Henry might have a point.
Do you?
But I do have a little bit of good news that might turn your frown upside down.
Oh, yes?
It looks, fingers, as though the funding may be coming through for my one-man show.
Oh, right.
It's an evening of monologue and song featuring some of my better-known characters. Would you like a little preview? Picture this scene. Darkness... then suddenly, spotlight, me.
Bing. He dances.
Listen to the rain on the roof go pit, pitty pat, pit, pitty pat. Sit. Oh, Mary, you look sad. You don't like musicals?
No. I suppose it just seems so unfair, Paddington's in prison, and yet life carries on.
Oh, I know. It must be so hard to accept that he won. That man with the dazzling blue eyes.
I beg your pardon.
The man in the poster, your wonderful drawing.
Yes, but how do you know he had blue eyes? It's just a pencil sketch.
Mary's pencil sketches of Phoenix in his various disguises flash over his face.
Ooh. Well, then I must have colored him in.
In the Brown's kitchen.
Phoenix Buchanan?
He's a master of disguise.
She's gone mad.
Think about it, Henry. Someone out there knows about the cause of her fortune, right?
Alleged fortune.
And Knuckles said we weren't looking for a criminal gang.
Knuckles?
Because there was no gang.
It was one man. Feathers knew all along.
Feathers? Who's Feathers? The parrot at the newsstand?
No.
Can we just return to planet Earth for a moment? Phoenix Buchanan is a highly respected, award-winning actor and a member of our Platinum Club. He is not a petty thief.
Hang on a minute, Henry.
But let's just assume I'm wrong, shall we?
OK.
And that the fortune teller, career criminal and parrot are right.
Hmm.
May I remind you that you don't actually have any proof? Now, if anyone wants me, I shall be putting up posters.
Henry stomps out.
He's right.
Well, I believe you, Mary.
Actors are some of the most evil, devious people on the planet.
Are they?
They lie for a living.
Crikey.
If we're going to catch one,
yes,
we're going to need a foolproof plan.
Mary stands in front of a board covered in maps, evidence, and sketches of the suspect. In Paddington's cell, the bear reads a newspaper at the desk. Paddington climbs up the pipe.
Paddington.
The bear unscrews a pipe cap and looks into the opening.
Knuckles?
Got a proposition for you, kid. Me and the boys have been talking, and it seems to us, if you're going to clear your name, you're going to need our help.
The Browns may mean well, but...
It takes a thief to catch a thief.
The inmates talk into their pipe openings.
If we could figure a way out of here and hit the streets, we'd find this guy soon enough.
But... that would mean escape.
It certainly would, and we got a plan.
But it's a four-man job, so we need your help. What do you say, kid?
It's very kind of you, Knuckles, but I don't think Aunt Lucy would like the idea of us breaking out of prison. The Browns will find the real thief. I just need to be patient.
You may not want to hear this, kid, but sooner or later, the Browns, well, they'll forget you.
I always do.
We'll miss one visit, then two.
Before you know it, you won't have a home to go back to.
You're wrong, Knuckles. You're all wrong. The Browns aren't like that. They'll come tomorrow and they'll have good news. You'll see.
He replaces the pipe cap. Now, Judy and Jonathan ring the intercom for the office of Felicity Fanshawe.
It's Judy Brown from the Portobello Express. Come in.
Inside.
So what's this for, darlings? School newspaper?
Yes, we thought the agent of the Phoenix Buchanan would be really interesting.
And you'd be right, but I've got 2 minutes, so we better make it snappy. And I've only given you that because you've brought breakfast. Nice buns, by the way.
She selects a bun from several pastries. Meanwhile...
here he comes.
Mrs. Bird greets a delivery guy.
Hello, Joe! What a surprise! What are you doing here?
I was posting letters. How's Paddington?
Oh, he's a tough wee bear.
Yeah, he is. Well, send him my best.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Joe.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
While Joe is distracted, Mary sets a large basket in the back of the delivery van and shuts herself inside it. Joe returns to his van. He eyes the basket, then glances around before checking its tag.
Mr. Buchanan.
In Felicity's office.
So, when can we expect to see Mr. Buchanan back on stage?
Phoenix? Oh, I wouldn't hold your breath, darling. No, don't get me wrong. He's a terrific actor. But there is a teensy little problem.
Really?
He won't work with other people. Thinks they dilute his talent.
Miss Fanshawe.
Oh, I must scoot. We're having lunch with a big Broadway producer.
Oh, where are you going?
The Ritz, darling. Really nice buns.
Felicity leaves, and Judy shuts off a tape recorder. From a phone booth in Windsor Gardens, Mrs. Bird watches Joe deliver the basket to Phoenix.
Well, good heavens.
Mrs. Bird places a call to the kids in another phone booth.
The package has been delivered. Repeat, the package has been delivered.
At Phoenix's home.
Barkridge's, no less. Lucky, lucky Phoenix.
He opens the basket filled with packing material. In the booth, Judy and Jonathan play tape recorders into the phone.
Hello.
Phoenix.
Felicity. What a lovely surprise. I was beginning to think you'd lost my number.
I've got 2 minutes, so we better make it snappy.
Okay.
We're having lunch with a big Broadway producer.
Well, wonderful news. Yes, yes. Where does one go?
The Ritz, darling.
I am on my way.
Nice buns, by the way.
Judy quickly stops the recording.
I beg your pardon?
Jonathan rewinds his tape.
Really nice buns.
Thank you, darling. I've never had any complaints about Mr. and Mrs. Bottycheek.
Yes.
gloves, keys, and exit.
Once he's gone, Mary emerges from the basket, wiping packing material off her face. In the Browns' bathroom, Henry looks out the window while brushing his teeth and spots Mary in Phoenix's home.
Mary?
She rubs a pencil on a notepad.
Where all your dreams come true.
Mary examines the message imprinted on the page, packing material still clinging to her hair and clothes. She jumps, then turns to find Henry in his pajamas outside a window. He mouths, "Open the window."
Hello, darling.
Have you gone insane?
I know it's Phoenix. I'm going to prove it.
This is breaking and entering.
We haven't broken anything.
Henry knocks over a vase and it shatters.
Why would Phoenix want to steal a pop-up book? He's a millionaire.
That's where you're wrong. He took money all over town, look.
So he's got a few bills. I mean, everyone... Good grief, the man spends a lot on face cream.
He hasn't put a penny to his name. Now, come on, let's find that book. Get out of here.
Walking down a sidewalk, Phoenix catches his reflection in a window and touches his bare neck.
Cravat.
He checks his watch, then turns back. At his house, Mary and Henry check different rooms.
Well?
Nothing.
We must be missing something.
Unless there's nothing to find. Now, can we please go?
She spots indentations on the carpet.
Look, Henry.
What?
The carpet.
Yes, it's lovely. I'll order a swatch.
Give me a leg up.
Oh.
Quick.
Henry lifts up his wife, and she presses on a section of the ceiling, which pops open.
Yes.
A ladder unfolds and settles perfectly into the carpet indentations.
A secret room.
It's an attic.
A secret attic.
It's an ordinary attic.
They climb up into the mannequin room.
I mean, look, it's just a perfectly normal... Oh, my God, he's a weirdo.
Look, Henry, the nun, the thief, the king.
We were right.
Sorry, we?
Well, I mean, I never...
Phoenix rushes through the front door.
Quick, get down.
As Phoenix puts on a cravat in a downstairs bathroom, Mary and Henry sneak down the stairs nearby. She points toward the front door.
Quite frankly, ravishing.
Henry pushes her toward another room.
Hello?
They search for hiding places, and Phoenix draws a sword.
Who goes there? Reveal yourself.
Phoenix steps into the doorway of the sitting room and notices Henry's feet, in slippers, shuffling behind a side table.
Henry?
Henry pops up from behind a couch.
Hello, Phoenix.
What on earth are you doing here?
I might ask you the same thing.
Well, I live here. It's my house.
And I insure it. And for our Platinum Club members, we perform an annual free home inspection to verify your security arrangements.
In your pajamas?
Mm-hmm.
With your wife.
He reveals Mary behind a curtain pressing on the window.
Oh, hello, Phoenix.
Mary.
Didn't hear you come in.
She helps out when we're busy.
Oh, well, that sounds entirely plausible.
Does it? Great. Well, I'm delighted to say that everything seems tickety-boo.
Wonderful.
So, I'll get back to the office and get the boys to type that up ASAP. And we'll hope to see you soon.
Indeed. Perhaps next time, not in your pyjamas.
He's such a silly one.
Ciao now.
His smile fades. In the attic, he unlocks a drawer containing the pop-up book.
Oh, thank Larry, it's there.
Talking to the mannequins, Phoenix pretends to be their characters.
Yeah, but it was close, wasn't it? Aye. Too close, if you ask me. Oh, hold your nerve, Macbeth. Screw your courage to the sticking place. We are so nearly there. I have followed this lady through the whole of London and collected every one of her... clever little clues. Aye, but what do they mean? It's just a jumble of letters, ain't it? Au contraire, mon ami. They are not letters at all. They are musical notes. Indeed, Poirot. And I believe I know just where to play them.
The back of the book reads, "Where all your dreams come true," at a police station.
Hold it! That is an amazing story. But all you can actually prove is that Phoenix Buchanan keeps his old costumes. Bring me some hard evidence. Bring me the book with his fingerprints on, and then you've got a case. But until then, there's nothing I can do. I'm sorry.
What?
The policewoman walks away from the Browns.
What do we do now?
I don't know.
Well, at least we can tell Paddington we know who did it.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, we've missed visiting.
Oh, Paddington.
At the prison, Paddington sits at one of the visitation windows with his paws folded in front of him. He stares sadly at the vacant spot across the glass, but continues to wait. The lights go off around him. Later, he lies awake in his cell, staring at the framed photo of him with his family on the bedside table. He sees his image fade from the picture, and a tear escapes his eye and rolls down his snout. The tear drips onto the floor and rolls into a crack. A small green plant sprouts through the crack. Paddington looks down as dozens of other plants rise up from gaps in the floorboards. As their stems grow tall and their leaves unfold, Paddington props himself up in bed. Vines hang down the walls as vegetation fills the cell. Paddington slides off his bed, his feet landing in soft grass. He gazes around in wonder as sunlight shines down on him. The walls of his cell disappear, and he finds himself in the Peruvian rainforest.
Paddington!
Aunt Lucy!
Beams of sunlight shine through the trees as the little bear bounds through the lush green undergrowth. He ducks under tree branches on his way to his beloved aunt.
Aunt Lucy!
Paddington!
He jumps into her arms and hugs her tightly.
What are you doing here? I thought you'd be at home.
I'm afraid I don't have one anymore. You see, I'm in prison. And even the Browns have forgotten me.
As the view turns around Paddington, Aunt Lucy disappears, and the beautiful jungle is replaced by the weathered walls of his prison cell.
Paddington.
The bear climbs up the pipe and unscrews the cap.
Knuckles?
Tonight's the night. We leave at midnight. You want to clear your name? It's now or never. You in?
I'm in.
The prison's big clock ticks to midnight.
Right, time to call it a night. What's going on here anyway? They've been good as gold recently.
The warden shuts off the lights and leaves his office, where a model of the prison sits on a table. The front wall peels open to reveal the rows of cells inside.
Lights out.
The lights go off, and Knuckles, Spoon, Fibs, and Paddington, in neighboring cells, immediately get out of bed and open trap doors on the floor. At the same time, they hop through the doors and into a dusty crawl space. Single file, the four prisoners crawl after Knuckles, who opens a grate at the end of the passage. Knuckles jumps through the opening into a spiraling chute. The others go after him, sliding down, with Paddington bringing up the rear. They fall through the doors of the laundry chute, landing on a pile of dirty uniforms. Behind Knuckles and Paddington, Spoon and Fibs push a rolling woven laundry bin into a storage room. They each find a parcel with their name on it from a wall of cubbies. Knuckles climbs up a ladder and opens a door in the ceiling. He points up into the clock tower, where a giant pendulum swings back and forth. Paddington goes through the hatch and ducks to avoid the pendulum. When it swings back the other way, the bear grabs on and starts to climb up the pendulum's incredibly long arm. He reaches the top and squeezes between rotating cogs, whose movements carry him up into the warden's office.
Oh.
He goes to a wall of keys and finds one labeled Canteen.
Ah.
Now, Knuckles unlocks the canteen door with the others in tow. Fibs grabs a stack of folded tablecloths and throws them into the laundry bin. They hurry past a table of sweets.
Ooh, sandwiches.
He eats a few.
Paddington, come in.
He grabs several more before taking the entire plate of sandwiches and wolfing them down on his way into the kitchen. Spoon and Fibs hoist a gas cylinder as Knuckles pushes open a skylight and peeks out. Moments later, a guard in the watchtower doesn't notice as the prisoners climb past him with all their supplies. On the roof, they unfold the large square of sewn-together tablecloths. With a match, Knuckles lights a burner. The flame reflects in Paddington's amazed eyes as the laundry bin rises into the air. The prisoners ride inside the bin around the gas cylinder as the tablecloths inflate above them, forming a makeshift hot air balloon. The big inmate, T-Bone, reads a book in bed with a basket of knitting on his nightstand. He goes to his window and grins as he sees the hot air balloon sailing away.
Good luck, little bear.
Now the balloon soars over the River Thames toward a bridge strung with white lights. The full moon glows in the night sky.
This is the life, lads.
Woo-hoo!
Freedom!
Knuckles throws off his hat, and the escaped prisoners all change out of their uniforms. Paddington puts on his red hat as the balloon glides toward the pointed skyscraper.
Bring her down, Spoon.
The balloon descends slowly, touching down in front of an abandoned building. The foursome jumps out of the bin and dashes through the building toward a seaplane docked beyond a fence. Fibs goes to work on the fence's lock.
There she is, boys. Our ticket out of here.
What do you mean? Where are we going?
Knuckles glances at Spoon.
Might as well tell him, Knox.
Tell me what? Aren't we going to clear my name?
Sorry, kid. Change of plan.
What?
We're leaving the country.
And you're coming with us.
But you lied to me.
Oh, hey, now. It wasn't like that. We were doing you a favor. If we told you the truth, you'd never have come along. And it's better this way. We are gonna make marmalade together.
But I don't want to, Knuckles. I want to clear my name and go home. And you said you'd help. You promised.
Knuckles straightens, frowning sympathetically at Paddington.
Sorry, kid. No can do.
Paddington!
The bear runs off.
Let him go. He wants to get himself arrested. That's his choice.
Later, a light snow falls, and Paddington holds his blue jacket closed as he pads along a city sidewalk with his suitcase. He jogs into an alley and keeps his back to the street with his eyes closed as the police vehicle speeds past. Spotting a phone booth in the alley, Paddington takes off his hat and pulls Mrs. Bird's coin from his ear. His face brightens. The light in the booth comes on as he enters. He lifts the receiver and drops the coin in the slot before dialing a number.
Hello.
Hello, Jonathan.
It's the Brown residence. We're not here now, but leave a message.
Hello, it's me, Paddington.
I hope you don't mind my calling. I just wanted to let you know I've broken out of prison and, well, I suppose I'm on the run. I didn't really mean to, but Knuckles said that if we broke out, he'd help clear my name. And then I could come home.
But he's gone now. And I'm on my own. I don't really know why I'm calling. I suppose I just wanted to say goodbye.
Paddington hangs up the phone and leaves the booth, which goes dark. He walks sorrowfully down the alley, wiping his nose with his paw. The booth lights up again, and Paddington races back inside, clumsily lifting the phone's receiver to his ear.
Oh, hello?
Paddington?
Yes. Yes, it's Paddington.
I'm so sorry I escaped, Mrs. Brown, but I thought you'd forgotten me.
Oh, we'd never forget you, Paddington.
Paddington?
Your family.
And we know who the thief was.
It's Phoenix Buchanan.
Mr. Buchanan?
But he's disappeared into thin air.
I've been looking for him at every landmark in that book.
Every last page.
Where all your dreams come true.
Why'd you say that?
Oh, it was written on the last page of the pop-up book.
Always made me think of Aunt Lucy.
So bizarre.
Is it?
I found that exact same phrase on a scrap of paper in Phoenix's house.
Really?
Sure, I've seen that before.
Judy shows a picture from the fair.
Where all your dreams come true.
The organ?
That must be where Madame Koslova hid her fortune.
Let's get to the fair.
It's too late. They're leaving today.
From Paddington Station.
At 6:35.
There's still time.
Paddington, head for the station.
If we can find Phoenix and get hold of that book, his fingerprints will prove everything.
But that's miles away, Mr. Brown. I'll...
In front of the alley, Barnes hops off the back of his garbage truck.
I'll see you there.
Moments later...
Clear the road! This is a refuse emergency!
Sorry!
In Windsor Gardens...
Fellow citizens, I've just received intelligence. The bear has escaped and may be heading this way. I have raised the neighborhood panic level to wild hysteria.
Get out of the way, Mr. Curry.
Paddington's not coming this way.
He's going to clear his name.
And we're going to bring him home.
We don't want him here.
No, of course you don't. You never have. As soon as you set eyes on that bear, you made up your mind about him. Well, Paddington's not like that. He looks for the good in all of us, and somehow he finds it. It's why he makes friends wherever he goes. And it's why Windsor Gardens is a happier place whenever he's around. He wouldn't hesitate if any of us needed help. So stand aside, Mr. Curry, because we're coming through.
The Browns and Mrs. Bird climb into a car, and Mr. Curry's eyes widen. The car lurches forward, and the headlights shut off.
Nice try, Brown. Your plan seems to have stalled, like your vehicle. Try to choke.
Neighbors in their pajamas run out and surround the car.
Clutch down. Second gear, Mr. Brown.
What?
What you doing?
Under three.
They push the car.
You are illegally perambulating on a public highway.
Put your backs into it.
Oh. Do not push that vehicle.
Bring Paddington home.
Thank you.
The car crashes through Curry's panic level sign. Elsewhere, the garbage truck arrives outside Paddington Station. Barnes hops off and sets a trash bin cover over the little bear.
Right, Paddington. Stay low and remember, you're a bin.
They give each other two thumbs up. Now, the bin toddles through the station.
You're a bin, or a bin. Just an ordinary bin going for a walk.
Paddington spots a police officer approaching and stops. The officer tosses in a piece of food.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The officer turns back.
Nothing to see here, officer. Just a bin.
Quite good being a bin.
Meanwhile, the Brown's car speeds over a bridge with outdoor train platforms below. Back inside the station, the bin sits in the middle of a walkway along the Kozlova train cars. Paddington peers out the opening and watches a bald man passing two station employees.
Gentlemen.
The bald man abandons his suitcases and boards one of the cars. He checks the walkway, revealing himself to be Phoenix in disguise. As the Kozlova train starts to move, Paddington sheds the trash bin cover and leaps on board. Meanwhile, the Brown's car arrives at the station. The family jumps out of the car and races down the walkway after the departing train.
Paddington! Mr. Brown! Quickly! He's on board!
Henry can't catch the train.
Don't worry, I'll handle it myself!
We've got to catch up with that train!
But how?
They turn to a green steam train on a parallel track.
I've got an idea.
On the steam train, the judge sits with his wife.
Good morning, madam, sir. Welcome on board.
Morning, thank you.
May I offer you a glass of champagne?
Thank you very much.
Civilized, that's very civilized, kind.
Yes. Nice to have a break after all I've been through with that beastly bear.
Oil of pressure.
In the engine car.
Water, half a glass. Air brake, off.
Nice work, J-Dog.
My name's not J-Dog. It's Jonathan Brown. And I like steam trains.
He pulls a lever. The train lurches and the waiter spills champagne on the judge.
Get off! Stop it! Don't shush me, Gertrude. I have just been spilled upon by chilled liquid.
Gerald, I want you to shush.
Yes, Gertrude.
Now, the escaped prisoners fly over the countryside and listen to a radio in the seaplane.
Four convicts made a daring escape from Portobello Prison last night. The prisoners all appear to have vanished without a trace. Except Paddington Brown, who was seen boarding a fare train bound for Bristol. Police are closing in and expect to make an arrest soon.
Poor little fella. Must be somewhere down there right now.
Shouldn't we help him, Knuckles?
How? We go back down there, they won't just lock us up, they'll throw away the key.
I know, but he's our friend.
Stick to the plan. I don't do nothing for no one for nothing.
Knuckles looks out the window with a conflicted expression. Later, the Kozlova train travels alongside a river. On board, Phoenix enters a car and removes his bald cap. He sets down his bag and pulls a sheet off the grand organ, decorated with statues of the original performers, including the magician.
Well, grandfather, the moment of truth.
Phoenix pulls the pop-up book from his bag and opens it to the first page.
D.
He presses a key on the organ.
D. A.
Outside the car, Paddington peeks inside.
The book.
Paddington glances into the car behind him and spots a display of toffee apples. Oh. On the steam train, Judy uses her camera to spy on the Kozlova train up ahead.
What's he doing?
I don't know!
Paddington!
He can't hear us!
Can this thing go any faster?
I can try, but I need more coal.
I'm on it!
Pull alongside! I'm going across!
I'll come with you!
Judy!
Just you try and stop us!
Come on, then!
Henry steps out of the car and inches along the outside. On the other train, Paddington pops up between two cars and tears the plastic wrapping off a toffee apple with his teeth. He sticks it to the roof of the train and does the same with a second candied apple. Placing one foot on top of each treat, Paddington takes a few steps along the roof. He looks up to see a tunnel just ahead. He bends all the way backwards as the train enters the tunnel, the roof mere inches above him. The train emerges on the other side, and Paddington straightens, his face covered in soot. He sneezes off the soot.
You ready?
Yep!
Go!
As the steam train on a parallel track catches up to the other train, Judy and Mrs. Bird hop across. Henry puts one foot on the Kozlova car as the tracks veer apart. He loses hold of the steam train, his arms flailing.
Open your mind, and your legs will follow.
Henry presses his palms together as he lowers into the splits between the trains. His eyes widen as he sees a pole up ahead.
Ah! Ah! Mr. Brown!
Mrs. Bird!
She pulls him on board, in the car with the organ.
See.
Above Phoenix, Paddington slides open the roof hatch.
And finally, E.
Phoenix pushes the last key and the organ lights up.
It works.
The statue of the flying swan on her trapeze rises past a complicated series of rotating cogs. Paddington sticks his toffee apple shoes to the ceiling of the car and swings in, hanging upside down behind Phoenix, who stares giddily at the moving parts. A mechanism inside the organ opens a box full of sparkling jewelry and treasures.
Hello?
Paddington uses a toffee apple to pick up the book.
West End, here I come.
Phoenix turns to Paddington.
Morning.
Phoenix bumps a key and the organ closes around the treasure box.
No! What was it?
D. F. D.
No! Come back with that book!
Outside, Paddington clutches the pop-up book as he runs along the top of the moving train. Phoenix climbs up to the roof and sees the bear getting away. Meanwhile, Judy, Mrs. Bird, and Henry weave through the chains of hanging swings in one of the train cars. Above, Paddington barely makes it between cars as Phoenix pursues him, easily hopping over the gaps.
Where do you think you're going, Bear? It's a train. It comes to an end, like all of us, alas.
Paddington nearly walks off the end of the train but catches himself. He slowly turns to Phoenix.
Exit, Bear. Pursued by an actor.
A hatch slides open and Phoenix falls into a car.
Phoenix Buchanan.
Mrs. Bird?
Oh, so now you remember me.
Well, I never.
The cavalry. An old crone, a little girl, and an insurance man. What am I going to do?
I'll tell you exactly what I'm going to do.
I'm going to bloomin' well biff you on the nose.
Not a very good idea.
He takes a sword from the wall.
Stage combat. Level 4.
Mrs. Bird grabs a rifle.
Well, where I come from, laddie. They teach you never to bring a knife to your gunfight.
I think you'll find that fires plastic darts.
She shoots him in the forehead with a suction cup dart.
So it does.
Whereas this sword looks very sharp.
He beheads plush flamingos.
Back you go. All of you, back.
Phoenix takes 3 sets of handcuffs from a box. A view from above shows the 2 trains traveling side by side. Paddington locks one of the cars from the outside. In the steam train's dining car...
And for you, sir, the jamba pavlova. Enjoy.
Gerald looks out his window and sees Paddington on the other train.
Hello, Your Honor. The hair's looking lovely.
The judge faints face first into his dessert. Mary pokes out of the steam train.
Paddington!
Mrs. Brown!
He glances at his suitcase.
Ah,
I've got an idea!
Meanwhile, Phoenix checks Henry's, Judy's, and Mrs. Bird's handcuffs.
Excellent. Now for your furry friend.
Paddington wedges his window washing ladder in a broken floorboard between train cars. Now, kneeling on the very end of the ladder, Paddington extends it toward the other train.
Slow down, Jonathan!
Jonathan lowers the brake and sparks fly from the wheels. Mary reaches out to Paddington, who rides the lengthening ladder.
Gooey! What a clever little plan.
Paddington winds the crank faster as Phoenix pushes on the locked door. Henry strains against his cuffs.
Don't worry. I know a wee trick Harry Houdini used to do.
She picks her handcuffs with a hairpin. Meanwhile, the ladder stops and the crank comes off in Paddington's hand. He reaches out to Mary, only a small distance between them. As Phoenix rams against the door, it starts to break. The trains head for two separate tunnels.
Jump, Paddington! I'll catch you!
Phoenix kicks open the door.
No!
The actor hits a button on the ladder, retracting it. He seizes Paddington just before the trains enter the tunnels. Phoenix takes the book and locks the bear in the last car. Stepping onto the next one, he removes the pin holding the cars together.
Bye-bye, bear!
Phoenix whacks the railroad switch, causing the last car to change tracks. As he steps inside, a camera flash goes off. A few cars ahead, Judy lowers her camera and Henry steps into the doorway. He hurls a wooden ball which flies through multiple cars and strikes Phoenix in the forehead.
Bullseye.
Phoenix drops the pop-up book and falls face first to the floor. Meanwhile, Paddington peers out the last car. The bear shuts his eyes as the single train car flies off the end of the track. Paddington flies along the floor as the car crashes down a hillside and into the river. It sinks through the water on the steam train.
Stop the train, Jonathan!
The train slows to a stop. Underwater, Paddington swims desperately through the car, surfacing in a pocket of air. The car settles on its side on the bottom of the river. Above, Mary hops off the train, removing her coat. She climbs up onto the edge of a bridge and dives off, plummeting to the river far below. She swims down toward the train car. Inside it, water pours through the cracks, slowly filling the air pocket. Reaching the car, Mary unlocks the bar on the sliding doors. Paddington takes a deep breath and swims toward the doors as Mary opens them a crack. They try and fail to widen the opening. They discover a locked chain securing the doors and both yank hard on it. It doesn't budge, and Mary's brow furrows. Paddington lets go of the chain, shaking his head hopelessly at her. Mary grips one door, and Paddington reaches out through the crack. She takes his paw as they gaze into each other's eyes. A plane lands on the surface. Mary and Paddington look up as Knuckles swims down to them. Phibbs and Spoon join him and everyone pulls on the doors. A link in the chain breaks and the doors open wide. Mary takes Paddington's paw and swims upward with the escaped prisoners. They all bob to the surface as the seaplane rests on the water nearby. They wade to the shore with Paddington in Mary's arms.
Knuckles, you came back.
Can't make marmalade on me own now, can I?
Thank you, everyone.
Oh. Paddington? He's burning up.
Better get the little fella to bed.
The Browns meet them on shore.
Mom!
Paddington!
He's not well.
Don't worry, he's gonna be fine. Aren't you, little buddy?
Now, snow dusts the rooftops of the pastel-colored townhouses of Windsor Gardens. The view passes through the round window of the Browns' attic. The family sits around Paddington's bed, where the bear sleeps. Mrs. Bird takes his temperature. Paddington's eyes open.
Paddington!
Where am I?
Take it easy now. You gave us a wee scare. but you're home now.
Home?
That's right. Look.
The police realised they made a terrible mistake.
Phoenix Buchanan has been arrested. And, I might add, is no longer a member of our Platinum Club.
Then...
you're a free bear.
How long have I been asleep?
3 days.
3 days? But that means...
it's Aunt Lucy's birthday.
And I never sent her anything.
It's all right, Paddington.
But it isn't all right, Mrs. Brown. You see, Aunt Lucy did so much for me when I was a cub. Without her, I'd never have come to London. And I suppose all I ever really wanted was to make her proud. But now she's going to wake up on her birthday with no present and think I've let her down completely.
Oh, you great goose. She won't think that at all.
Won't she? Come with us.
Paddington climbs out of bed.
Here he is!
Mr. Gruber and all of Paddington's friends from the neighborhood clap as he comes downstairs with his family. The Colonel and Miss Kitts hold hands.
What are you all doing here?
We wanted to say thank you.
Thank you?
For everything you've done for us.
Yeah. If it wasn't for you, we'd never have met.
You helped me pass my exam.
I would be permanently locked out of my house.
I'd say you've rather a lot to be proud of. Yes.
And when we heard that the police wanted the popping book for evidence, we thought we'd find Aunt Lucy another present.
So we all clubbed together.
I pulled in a few favours from my old Air Force chums.
And we think she's going to love it.
But what is it?
You wanted to get that book so Aunt Lucy could see London, didn't you?
It was always her dream.
Well, we thought, why look at London in a book when she could see the real thing? Why don't you go and answer that?
Mary gives him an encouraging nod. His eyes wide with emotion, Paddington walks past his smiling friends to the front door and opens it. On the front step, Aunt Lucy drops her belongings to hug Paddington.
Paddington.
Happy birthday, Aunt Lucy.
With his little face pressed to her orange jacket, Paddington closes his eyes happily. Fade to black. As the credits roll, a book titled My Scrapbook opens to a page with pictures from Aunt Lucy's birthday. Photos of Paddington and Aunt Lucy at various London landmarks decorate a page next to theater tickets, including one for the Shakespeare's Globe production of Macbeth. The page turns to an article with the headline Knuckles, Fibs, and Spoon Pardoned. Changed men, says Judge. One page says, Knuckles Sandwiches, reformed convict to open tea room. In a photo, Paddington and Knuckles pose with baked goods below the words, Sales go through the roof. On the next page of the scrapbook, text reads, Mary Brown swims channel, forgets passport, and has to swim back again. Another page includes the headline, Portobello Press to take on staff, applications from boys now welcome. The words, Full steam ahead, Jonathan Brown, formerly J-Dog, makes steam trains cool again, appear above a picture of Jonathan. The front page of a newspaper reads, Henry Brown promoted, he's an old head on middle-aged shoulders, says boss. The next page says, Phoenix Buchanan loses endorsement, a rough day for Phoenix, above his mugshot. Around the judge's photo, text reads, Phoenix Buchanan sentenced today, in the courtroom.
Phoenix Buchanan, you have proved yourself to be a heinous criminal and a disgrace to the noble profession of acting. I sentence you to 10 years, and I suggest that you use your time behind bars wisely.
I shall.
6 months later, in the prison, Phoenix, in the pink-tinted striped uniform, goes down the stairs with the warden and other guards singing and dancing back up.
Listen to the rain on the roof go.
Pit-pitty-pat.
Pit-pitty-pat. Pitty.
Sit, kitty-cat, we won't get home for
on the ground floor, prisoners step out of their cells holding pastel umbrellas and join Phoenix in a tap dance.
Let's have a drink and shelter from the showers. Rain, rain, don't go away, fill up the sky. Rain through the night, we'll stay cozy and dry.
Phoenix and the prisoners link arms in a line and kick in unison.
Listen to the rain on the roof go.
seated on woven laundry bins, guards kick rhythmically as prisoners wheel them past.
Pity that it's not a hurricane.
Two lines of prisoners flip Phoenix head over feet.
Listen quick to that lovely rain.
T-Bone pulls a rope, which lifts Phoenix onto the second floor below glowing letters that spell his name as the prisoners, warden, and guards strike a pose.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, it seems I didn't need the West End after all. Just a captive audience. What am I like? Guards, lock me up. But wait, you have.
He flashes a grin. Remaining opening titles: Hugh Bonneville, Sally Hawkins, Brendan Gleeson, Julie Walters, Jim Broadbent, Peter Capaldi, Madeline Harris, Samuel Jocelyn, Dame Eileen Atkins, Imelda Staunton, Michael Gambon, Tom Conti, Joanna Lumley, Noah Taylor, Aaron Neal, Jessica Hines, Ben Miller, Sanjeev Bhaskar, Robbie G., with Hugh Grant and Ben Wishaw as the voice of Paddington. Casting by Nina Gold and Lauren Evans. Hair and makeup designer Christine Blundell. Costume designer Lindy Hemming. Music supervisor Nick Angel. Composer Dario Marianelli. Editors Mark Everson and Jonathan Amos, ACE. Production designer Gary Williamson. Director of Photography Eric Alexander Wilson. Executive producers Bob Weinstein, David C. Glasser. Executive producers Ron Halpern, Didier Lupfer. Executive producer Alexandra Ferguson Derbyshire. Executive producers Rosie Allison, Jeffrey Clifford. Paddington Bear created by Michael Bond. Written by Paul King and Simon Farnaby. Produced by David Heyman. Directed by Paul King. More credits roll. Line producer, Tim Wellspring. Second Unit Director, John Sorapure. VFX Producer, Robin Saxon. First Assistant Director, Jack Ravenscroft. Animation Director, Pablo Grillo. VFX Supervisors, Andy Kind and Glenn Pratt. Supervising Location Manager, Jonah Coombs. Post Production Supervisor, Tim Grover. Sound Designer, Supervising Sound Editor, Glenn Fremantle. Production Sound Mixer, Danny Hambrook. Cast, in order of appearance: Michael Gambon as Uncle Pastuzzo, Imelda Staunton as Aunt Lucy, Ben Wishaw as Paddington, Madeline Harris as Judy Brown, Samuel Jocelyn as Jonathan Brown, Sally Hawkins as Mary Brown, Hugh Bonneville as Henry Brown. For our friend, Michael Bond. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. The motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Studio Canal SA is the author and creator of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws in all countries throughout the world. Copyright 2017 Studio Canal SAS, all rights reserved. This film has been described by Deluxe with funding by Warner Brothers Pictures, voice by Laura Post. Against a black background, letters appear inside a white rectangle with two rounded corners, Studio Canal. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner company.